The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, you like professional wrestling too. This is Shake the Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. Chris Novembrino is out doing Tram Fest out in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So if you're out in that area and want to listen to music and ride a tram up and down a mountain, it's for you. Joining me, my old compatriot from the old neighborhood over at Fightful, now a part of Voices of Wrestling, just sitting there waiting for somebody to quit so he can do a podcast here. Is that the deal? Mr. Warren Hayes. Hi, Warren.
Oh, exactly. Like, I just follow Jeff around and I take his spots when he leaves. That's what I do.
That's kind of what you did at Fight. You didn't exactly do that at Fightful. You were the play-by-play guy more than the... Denise more took my spot than anybody there. And I don't wish anybody at Fightful ill will. I'm the 13th man on the bench now. I haven't...
Yeah. I think for a while you were on the Brock Lesnar deal.
Yeah, I thought I was. And then all of a sudden... And then all of a sudden they stopped calling. So I think I'm more on the Goldberg deal.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much
it's just like, we've gotten enough out of you. Though I haven't begged Sean Ross Sapp for a spot in a while, just because I know other people want it. But we're going to see a football game later this year, so we'll be good.
There you go. You'll have some, yay, you have some FaceTime. You'll have one-on-one FaceTime. There you go.
I'll get all the dirt then. We chat on DM like almost every other day. So we're good. It's just one of those things where it's like, time, space, whatever. You are writing columns think pieces of wrestling, or Voices of Wrestling? How are you enjoying it?
Very profound think pieces. No, actually, I'm enjoying it.
The wrong choice.
No, I'm enjoying it tremendously. I was actually stunned that Rich let me jump aboard to write a couple of articles. They went well. Next thing you know, I'm on the contributors list and it's fantastic. I just wrote a review, a preview. Jeez, I'll get the language thing down. I'm on my way. A preview of the New Japan show, the Destruction show in Ryogoku with Jay Michael. So that was fun.
Nice. Who do you hate most now? You've been in the Slack for a while. Why is it Suit Williams? No, I'm kidding. Suit's great. I love him. Just trying to build feuds.
You know that Chris Samza guy, he keeps getting plugs on TV all the time, right? Getting a big head, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Kevin Kelly all the time. My friend Chris Samza telling me the stats.
He sent me all these stats now on Collision. You know, he used to be just on New Japan World, right? And they're like, oh, isn't that quaint? Now he's on TBS, TNT, whatever it is.
All good. Okay, so you fit in nice with Voices of Wrestling. That's good. If anybody hates anybody, it's me. So it's fine. I'm good with that. I'll be the village idiot of this wrestling podcasting / writing empire if we need to, now that Rob McCarron's left. I'm good with that. But I told you pre-show, you're privy to something that we don't normally get, and the fans of Shake Them Ropes have not gotten in a number of years, and that is a good old-fashioned Jeff Hawkins rant. And here we go. That angle on AEW Dynamite on Tuesday with Juice Robinson and MJF should have never happened. It was stupid. It was careless. It was reckless. Dare I say they want it for the internet clicks, but I'm thinking that at this time. It was tone deaf. And there's not a single defense of it that I've heard, including from our own Suit Williams, who I got into yet another tassel with 2 weeks in a row now. Love you, Suit. But you're wrong about this. And let me explain. It's 3 days after the darkest day, the most number of deaths since the Holocaust for Jews. Now, I'm not doing stolen valor here. I'm just saying there are times and places for things. In real television, if there was a television episode with a terror attack and a terror attack happens, they would pull that episode. You may not even ever see it. There is nothing wrong with stepping in here and canceling this part of the angle for later or in perpetuity. Let me address the criticisms. Because Wednesday night, if you listen to my show over on Fight Game Media, I was heated. I was very heated. I'm a little heated now, but not as much as I was then, to the point where I almost tuned out the show. I was so angry at this. Number one, Juice Robinson always holds quarters, or that's part of his gimmick. That's great. He had Friedman written across it where nobody refers to Max. Well, Jay Friedman as Friedman. They refer to him as MJF. They were leaning in to the anti-Semitism part of this thing. There's no denying that. You can't put up an intellectual defense of that part of it. They're doing that for you. Well, Max was okay with it. It was Max's idea. It was Max's tribute. It was Max's statement. He's Jewish. You know, it's part of his faith, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Someone in that company, in production, in booking, in creative, what have you, needs to save him from himself then. Because this is not the time nor place for the tribute or whatever statement you're trying to make. It is 3 days after this, and they are still pulling bodies, and we're still trying to figure out what happened. Doing this on your television show is, there's no place for it. And especially in pro wrestling, which has a history of doing these bad taste kind of things. I compared it to Muhammad Hassan and Undertaker. I know MJF wasn't having any of that, but let me give you another tone-deaf thing that this company itself did at one point. On Good Friday, I think it was this year, might have been last year, they did a Crown of Thorns in that angle with, I believe, Adam Cole and Adam Page. Not sure who the participants were at the time, but there was a Crown of Thorns involved. They made a crown out of barbed wire, and they put it on a guy, and they pile-drove him. That is just tone deaf. It is insensitive. And you don't do that kind of stuff, especially in what is considered a low rent art form, unfortunately, like this. AEW is considered the counter proposal to the crassness of WWE. They lean into that as well. They encourage social media with talent posing with signs, you know, protect trans kids. Other socio-political thoughts. We are thought that this is a respite from the same kind of crap that we'd get where I grew up with, which loved its cheap racial heat. I'm watching Harley Race tell Ron Simmons, oh, you should be carrying my bags, boy, and other things like that. Ric Flair would go deep into the racial stuff at times. You know, some of my favorites. Growing up in Southern wrestling, where I grew up, this was part and parcel, and it was considered good because it was cheap heat. And we, as a society, have said no. And AEW is not supposed to be like that. Now, some of the other proposals type thing that I was saying, well, you know, and oh, you know, it's just bringing current events into things. You got to wait. You got a 5-week build. You can't wait 2 weeks to bring up the quarters thing, because it was AEW. It was AEW itself that put the anti-Semitic twist on the quarters. Okay, it might be that Juice Robinson used this in New Japan. Great. Good for him. But MJF's lore and character lore is that he was bullied in school by people who threw quarters at him, yelling, "Pick those up, Jew boy." Okay, you have made that part of your television thing. So that's on you. You can't just go, "Oh, well, you know, that's just part of Juice Robinson's gimmick, blah, blah, blah." And I, you know, again, maybe this was Max's idea, maybe it wasn't, maybe somebody approved it, but there are at least 5 or 6 people in production, including Tony Khan himself, who should step in and say, "No, this is a bad idea." And I think in the fog of war, quote unquote, on this Title Tuesday, ooh, maybe this is a little edgelord. Maybe somebody's going to react negative to this. Maybe we're going to get some sort of controversy on Twitter. Tee-hee-hee. Not saying that's true, but it's either that or they were tone deaf to everything. And I can't parse which. End rant. Warren, your thoughts.
No, you hit all the important notes here. I sincerely believe that if it had not happened, let me backtrack a little bit. We, as professional wrestling fans, we knew at some point the quarters were going to pop. It. Someone was going to use the quarters because MJF he'd cut that promo twice, right? We've heard this story about the bullies and the quarters twice. So we knew at some point it was going to come up. That was inevitable. Pulling it up here at this point in time, it's not a delicate thing to do. You know, you could have waited a couple of weeks. Like you said, there was no rush for this to get out there. From everything we hear, MJF pretty much has final say on everyone. Like, no one says no to MJF, right? Like, right. Everything that he's plotted out since he started the Pro Chacho stuff, and even before that, he weaves control over what he does, and that's about it. And no one really says no to him, but there could have been just a rational ear just to tell him, "Max, did you think about this? Did you think about this? Did you think about this?" Because, look, it's all a question of context. Maybe within a month, people would have squirmed a little bit. Probably wouldn't have been as strong a reaction to it, you know? But the timeliness of it really does stick. And I'm with you, you know? I don't think, "Oh, it's Juice's gimmick." I don't think it... First of all, it's a recent thing that Juice had been doing in New Japan, yes. Yeah. Right? It's not something that he had been doing for years. It's not like, "Oh, classic Juice." It's fairly within the last year he'd been doing it, ever since he joined Bullet Club. And then at some point he started doing that. And the first few times you see it, you're like, "Wow, this is spectacular." You know, clocks a guy on the chin, the coins flip in the spotlight, you know, you're like, "Wow, this rules." Right. But yeah, so maybe this is their out to do it because it does feed into Juice's gimmick, but
they've made the character an anti-Semite.
I mean, it's not a great look for Juice, right? Is this a mask-off situation for Juice? I don't think it's like a Juice Robinson. I would assume that Juice Robinson is not.
The character and the person I don't believe are supposed to be like that, but it really put the Friedman across the role of quarters, right? And with him screaming that as opposed to Max or MJF
brings it's very purposeful.
It's very purposeful, and I don't understand. I'm of the impression that neither Dave Meltzer nor a couple other high profile things wanted to touch this with a 10-foot pole. I am willing to walk in there and take that kind of fire because, you know, I don't have access to any of these guys. I don't know.
That's fine. And the idea too, it's like, look, ultimately, like personally, I can only speak like personally, right? I think it was poorly timed. It yes. made me uncomfortable, right? And I tire of this kind of stuff in pro wrestling because, like you mentioned, pro res has a very bad history when it comes to dealing with ethnic groups, minority groups, vulnerable groups. You know, it's like very, very poor, checkered history. You outlined that already. So even the most well-versed television writers, movie writers, have to attack these subjects with a certain form of finesse, right? For lack of a better word. Whereas pro wrestling is all about brute force. It's yeah. not about finesse. It's about getting people over. That's what pro wrestling is about. It's about getting the reactions. It's getting people over. It's not about delving into the deep meanings of things. You know, it's not like when Retribution started up, we were expecting WWE to explore the socioeconomic problems that Antifa brings up, you know, on a weekly basis, you know, in the midst of the BLM riots, right? Yeah. No, we're not going to be discussing this on WWE. The idea is to use imagery to get a reaction to get people over. So
let's hammer Vince a little bit here. That was Vince basically wanting to call these people geeks and losers.
Sure.
You know, while his wrestlers beat them up and whatnot. And yeah, that was him making statements through wrestling angles, etc. So yeah.
Once they started talking, they were saying, "We are going to tear down the WWE." It's like, okay, come on now. You couldn't be more transparent here.
And do what?
And do what? But no, listen, I can only see this as, something that's distasteful, that makes me uncomfortable personally, right? I'm not going to try and speak for any for any Jews or anyone who lost anyone in the attacks recently. Like I'm in no position to do that. But as a person, as a human, as a fan, it makes me very uncomfortable. I feel we're going down paths that we've been down before, and touching on subjects that, like I said, wrestling doesn't have the finesse, the delicacy to tackle properly, other than boo, yay. That's silly.
Yeah, I Wednesday I was a little bit more heated because just a little bit about me. For 8 years, I lived in an Orthodox Jewish neighborhood, so it's one of those things, and I'm still close with some of my neighbors there, and they really helped me in moments of need. And I still remember fondly, I'd get knocks occasionally at night. Can you come turn our lights on? Because we can't. And would you like to join us for dinner while you're here? And just, you know, and so, you know, and they're hurting and have relatives who are hurting. And it was just one of those things where it was very visceral for me. So I also didn't want to come off as going, I am stealing these people's pain. I watched that. And I'm like, how does someone not point this out in a writer's room or a production meeting, or who has the run sheet in front of them or whatever, and say, hold on, this is a bad idea? Because all logic and reason dictates that numerous people knew this was coming, and nobody, it appears, was able to get through to somebody and say, this is stupid. And and it's been lingering with me for a few days, especially watching that nobody's apologized.
No, we've doubled down.
Have they?
Well, Max has.
Oh, right? Did he? Yeah. Oh, that's right. He did, didn't he?
And he has a speaking engagement with an organization, if I'm not mistaken, something like that, that was being advertised at the same time. So I'm like, okay, well, you know.
He's wrong. And it might be the arrogance of youth. We're both old. At least I'm old. I don't know about you.
Thank you. I'll come back whenever you want.
Thank you. But yeah, it's getting into the news, there's only one story. The big Tuesday war of 2023. It doesn't rhyme. Sorry.
doesn't roll off the tongue as well, though.
NXT versus AEW. Final numbers, I think, was like, do you have the numbers in front of you by chance?
I do not.
I know it was over 900,000 for NXT and I think over 600,000 for AEW. So 1.5 million people watched wrestling on a Tuesday. Other pertinent thoughts here. Nothing's changed. AEW is still the number two promotion. NXT is still double A ball for WWE. Even more, because there were people who were on there going, you know, this isn't fair because WWE is loading stuff up with their main roster and a bunch of has-beens to get viewers to watch it. Yeah, let's take a look at who was advertised for AEW Dynamite, shall we? Jon Moxley, who was pulled during the pre-show. Brian Danielson, Adam Copeland, Christian, Soraya. Stop me when you see the similarities here, kids, because they weren't plugging the Elite or the Pillars. Max made an appearance, and yes, Hangman was part of this, but this wasn't built around Kenny and the Bucks. This wasn't built around Jungle Boy, Sammy Guevara, and Darby Allin. Nope, this was built around and Chris Jericho, ex-WWE guys. So both companies are pointing at each other like the Spider-Man meme right now when it comes to crass, cheap marketing. Don't give me that. Yeah, NXT won. And, okay, but it's same as it ever was. Same as it ever was, to quote the Talking Heads. Nothing about this matters at all. And both shows were kind of indicative of the product. If you like AEW, that, you know, you got your long matches, you got some title changes. And if you like your NXT, you got a lot of angle stuff. Okay, great. But apparently you have an addendum to this. Apparently Tony is not too happy, Warren.
Oh, no. Well, he's been tweeting through the whole thing ever since the ratings were announced. Well, even before that. And by the way, 921,000 viewers for NXT, 0.30 in the demo. Mm-hmm. And 609,000 viewers for AEW, 0.26 in the demo. So a little closer on the demo than in total viewership. But, I mean, you know, first and foremost, like you cannot have expected AEW to win on a Tuesday night, moving from its regular scheduled block. That's just like, that's just wishful thinking. I don't think anyone.
We're creatures of habit, us wrestling fans.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And I think it's, anyone who was thinking about this, I believe in good faith, or at least within reason, expected NXT to blow them out of the water.
I actually thought AEW had a shot at winning this. I did. I thought.
Interesting.
I think their fan base loves AEW more than NXT loves their fan base loves that show. Perhaps, not that they don't have similar things, but I also thought like the demo. I thought the demo for AEW being much younger would put them over the top in terms of that part. But, you know, it was a bit of a shock to me. Yeah.
Maybe some people are a little surprised at how bad they got blown out of the water. Maybe I don't know. I was like, oh, okay. I figured it wouldn't be pretty, but yeah, Tony Khan is not taking this well. He hasn't been taking this well. First of all, he's been tweeting pretty much nonstop, at least for a CEO, let's put it that way. Since what was it, Monday, when he started announcing, oh, we're gonna have an overrun too, and plus we're adding 30 minutes on before that on YouTube. We're flying in. We're putting Minoru Suzuki on a red eye to get him. Suzuki was wrestling in Japan on Monday, and so they got him over on Tuesday.
Fly Suzuki out here, you know, for Eddie Kingston on a YouTube only pre-show, because we can't possibly put that on the show on Tuesday.
but we're going to get 30 minutes of uninterrupted wrestling just like the other guys, like, and then taking the shots at Vince and at Triple H and
the bald asshole one is the one that got me.
I wasn't that. I'm sorry. That was brilliant.
No, it was funny. Don't get me wrong.
That was brilliant. And within the context of Tony being hyped up for the big head to head and just letting things go, I'm like, okay, this is great. And this is the kind of chaos that I love in pro wrestling too. I love this kind of stuff. I love promoters doing promoter stuff like this. Like that. I really do.
No, but, no, I get that. I'll rebut in a sec. Continue.
But once we get to 2 days removed from the event, a full 24 hours after the ratings have been announced and your company got trounced, per expected, if you ask me, but, and you're still taking shots at Vince and his improprieties. I'm like, look, we all know Vince is a scumbag. Don't get me wrong. He's a piece of shit. That's fine. I'm sorry. Can we swear on this?
We can have a couple. I'll
dial it back from this point forward. It's my freebie. And after that,
I try and avoid getting demonetized on the YouTube. And there's one listener who used to say, hey, I listen with kids in the car. So thank you.
Oh, yes. And I've had viewers tell me that as well. So I'm like, oh, okay. You're going to be
so careful. I apologize, earmuffs, kids, if you heard that, but continue.
We'll have to put a warning at the start of the, we'll no, have we to won't. Record a preamble.
Daddy, what does that mean?
Oh boy. Angry letter to Jeff Hawkins.
That's
there you
fine.
Go.
I don't read the comments. Continue.
I'm just a guest anyway. but still going through it 2 days later. Now it's getting kind of sad. Now it's like, Tony, go run your businesses. You know, don't you have football teams that you have to look after too? Like there's a, come on, man, get off Twitter. None of this matters. Like at this point, it's no longer entertaining. Now it's more embarrassing than anything else. Now it makes me cringe, and now I don't like it.
No, but you've made me think about something that I haven't thought about in a long, long time. I've never thought, and this is so weird to say, I've never thought of Tony Khan as a promoter. You know, like Don King.
Sure.
Hyping up the fights and things like that. I've always just kind of thought of him more in the vein of Vince McMahon at times, where he's the corporate head and he speaks of his product and stuff like that. But he does a lot of the media in terms of not Vince, but in terms of Tony Khan, instead of sending out his talent to go out there and do the rah-rah stuff. But I've never thought of him as soulless shill that Don King is, where you watch him and think, hey, Don King once killed a man. I never think Tony Khan once killed a guy. Sure, you know, that kind of thing. Nor would you. But yes, it was all fun and games until the result.
Yeah.
And that was a definitive knockout in some ways. Even though I said nothing matters, it doesn't matter. But at the same time, it's like, you can't then come out and go, I wasn't ready. And no. That's what this feels like, is a heavyweight fight where he gets, that was a lucky shot. I can beat you on another day.
But, you know, but then what would have been the opposite? Like just business as usual and not doing nothing? Because then that's like, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. Either you go ham like he did and just stack the show, the 30 minutes uninterrupted, the 11 minute overrun, the 30 minute YouTube show. Like you just go completely
the 3 hour post show, the all nighter afterwards. I think there are people still wrestling on this show. I think it's gone for 4 straight days. You know,
I'm convinced Tony's still in Gorilla. Right,
it's like
now.
Woodstock. Yes, they are still in the arena.
He's still there.
Sitting there and he's imagining imaginary man or invisible man versus invisible Stan.
There you
and
go.
Bryce is out there doing his stuff. It's great. You know, 3 days
and
into
this,
it.
And despite two there being two invisible wrestlers, people are still complaining that Bryce is taking up all the spotlight. but otherwise, like, you know, he either goes all in or he just does a regular Dynamite, and then people complain. It's like, oh, he's not in, you know, he's not fighting, he's not, you know, he's not going all out to try and beat the guys, he's not doing his best, he's not putting his best foot forward. So it's really a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation as far as the level of involvement that you generate for this one specific show.
Okay, counterpoint.
Counterpoint.
He doesn't need to be this much of a character in his own world. You know?
Counterpoint. This guy is a pro wrestling board poster. What do you want from him?
Okay, fine. He has the exact same social skills as most board posters I've met from professional wrestling boards. Can't talk to people in public, can't have a conversation, aren't that charismatic, to be honest with you, are kind of boring and weird sometimes. Not all of you. Some of you are cool. I like you. But at the same, you know, I mean, I have been to, wow, something happened to my mic. Give me a second here. I've been to, you know, F4W conventions and things like that. And I've come in the middle of dinner and nobody's talking to each other or whatnot. And I'm the guy driving all the conversations. I'm the guy, you know, keeping things lively and fun. And so, I mean, these, I mean, you say this and now I'm even angrier because
it was mostly a bit too. I didn't mean
to. No, it's great, but it's also perfect. I mean, it's perfect. I mean, you watch him do interactions with wrestlers in, you know, on that YouTube. Did you watch the YouTube show before?
Yes, I did.
You know, where they're making the announcement about Orange Cassidy filling in for John Moxley. Did Tony Khan seem like the charismatic dynamo that we all think he is on Twitter?
No. He's incredibly awkward and stilted. I think there's something terribly delightful to it, though, where he's landing his lines in his.
Delightful though, or is it you're just watching? Going, no. You can't act.
you kind of want to go and squeeze your cheeks and go, oh, you're doing.
You
so want to
pat
good.
His head and go, all right, go back to Gorilla and produce the show. Thank you. You've done enough here.
But we know he look.
Lovingly. You know he cares. Said, he cares, and that's a positive. I get it.
There you go. Because he cares, and we know. And I say this lovingly. We know he's a dork. You know but we know he's a
yes.
He loves his pro wrestling, and he hugs the wrestlers, and he brings them in close. You know, he buries his head in their chest. You know, like that's it. That's who he is, right? So, but the dichotomy is like between, let's say, a guy like me acting like that and him. He's a billionaire.
Go on.
He's a billionaire and he's got people under his employ. And at some point, someone has to tell him, Tony, put the phone down, call Kenny and vent. Hell, call Cody and vent.
Call Mookie. You know? Mookie will listen.
Call Mookie and vent. There you go.
So you're saying the only difference between you and Tony Khan is his money.
Is the money. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. No, I see that. You're a suave motherfucker. No. anything else from just the Tuesday numbers? We can get into the content itself into the Lazy River, but I don't put much into this, and I you know, it's also one of those things where it's like, yes, NXT is trying to get higher rights because on its own nobody would want the show. I don't think it's one of those things where it's like it is the stepson of the WWE, and they're trying to make it marketable. I don't mind that. That's hustling too. So sure. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, it's I agree with you. Like there's it was I caught up with it a little bit. I haven't watched everything. I watched the main event. I watched a couple of things. And to me, it's just it's raw, you know, for better for worse. It was just an edition of Raw in a very small venue. With a level of production lighting that really grinds my gears. I don't know what it is about the production lighting.
It has a lot more character development than AEW, but both products were pretty much symbolic of the styles you're going to get. So, I mean, it was like, I compared it to Sweeps Week. On Sweeps Week when we were growing up, it mattered in November and February. Because that would be the week where all the special guest stars would come on to all of your favorite shows, and you'd get like oh, look, this week, Robin Williams on Homicide, Life on the Street, or, you know, Tom Hanks is going to be on Family Ties or whatever it is, you know. That's
special
what this
two-part
was.
Episodes and stuff
yeah,
like
oh,
that.
Oh, yes, yeah. The special two-part, you know, the sappy music in a special. Yeah. Heart-hearing.
Yeah, yes.
And of a different world. We talk about, you know. And then you make a joke about a very serious subject, Hawkins, that won't go over well after you just did that first rant about not doing things at the time. So I won't say it.
We don't love you because of your consistency, Jeff.
Well yes, I'm a hypocrite. I say these things. I just do things for the Lulz. So that's the news. There's not much else really to talk about. So we're going to get into a very special Lazy River because Warren watches a lot more foreign stuff than I do. So this will be interesting. Whatever we watched, whatever we saw, whatever we're thinking about, we can go right here. Again, starting on the beach of our Lazy River, we have Ice Cold Takes on WWE Fastlane. A premium live event that existed and happened and was there. It was perfectly cromulent, as we like to say. Here, doing the old Simpsons references. Tag team title match. Spectacular, I thought. I thought that was really a lot of fun. And the rest was there. What did you think of this show?
I agree. I think this was a nothing show. That nothing really happened outside of the big title change at first. You know, got to give a big shout out to Jey Uso, who split up with his tag team to start off his singles career, winning a tag team title. That's prime. That's good. Good for him.
Main event when he's with Cody Uso. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I enjoyed the three way for the women's title for what it was, but it was just a spot fest for the most part. And I love everybody in there. I will say this. Charlotte has a little rust on her. It gets a bit hairy there sometimes, I think. But you know, and Asuka's gonna be Asuka all the time.
But you know, when Io and Asuka had that opening salvo, you know, when they tossed Charlotte out of the
so
ring.
Good.
That was fun. I was like, man, why couldn't we have just gotten 15 minutes of this? Instead of I know why we shoehorn Charlotte into stuff. Don't get me wrong, and I'm one of the last like true Charlotte Flair believers. Like, I believe
in her. I just think we've never really gotten a true. I mean, we get a break when she's not around, but we've never gotten Charlotte down the card, so to speak, having to fight her way back up. It's when she reappears, she's in the main event all the time, and you're just like. We're building people here.
And I agree. Like she's a wrestler that, you know, she has moments where she's really, really good.
Yes.
But then there's matches where you're like, man, don't do the moonsault. You know, it's like in this match, her stuff connected. Like she has been in absolutely worse, more dire situations than this. And it all depends. The Charlotte matches at this point really hinge on which Charlotte is going to show up. Is it going to be the Charlotte who's going to be a little off, a little sloppy, doesn't care, or is she going to have her working boots on like she had at WrestleMania? You know, she had her wrestling boots on, but maybe not the nice shiny ones, you know, that sparkle when the light hits them just right. She had her working boots on, but wasn't her greatest outing ever. No.
Yeah, and I have one person in my feed who just DMs me constantly. It's like, you know, Bailey deserves so much better than what she's getting. People know I love me some Aunt Pam. I love me some Aunt Pam.
Mm-hmm.
She is, as she says, losing matches and winning life. This is what she is. The company loves her still. She is a plot device in many, many ways. And she's fine with that for now. Don't get me wrong. I think she would love to be back in the main event scene, et cetera, et cetera. But they trust her. She does the goofy, inept heel stuff. Fantastic. Let Io have some shine here for a while. You know, it's one of those things where it feels like this Io Shirai title run start it off because we're going to break up damage control and then see what she had. And then they got nervous about something or the breakup wasn't there because I think, you know, maybe it had something to do with Dakota and where her allegiances would lie or something like that. But it's just, or maybe Vince came back at that time to get the sale and it's like, well, no, we can't push her solo because she's not a big enough star. So let's keep her with damage control or whatever, whatever the excuse is. I feel like Io has always gotten the short shrift because she's always involved in these multi-person angles and they never build up something for her one-on-one because we're having the, you know, we're having the interference and whatnot, et cetera. I mean, that's really my only note on that.
I've always had a penchant for Bayley, and I will ride to the very end that they had a sure thing with her.
You and I both agreed. Back in the Fightful neighborhood,
that they
just lit a giant pile of money on fire.
Yeah,
when they went away from the straight babyface pusher like John Cena thing.
That's all they needed to do with her. No, they had to WWE it. You know, they had to make her never kiss a boy and all that stuff. You know, remember that?
Oh God. I've blocked out so many bad ideas by WWE in the back of my head. It's not even fun, but I will still maintain she is still the best bell-to-bell worker in that division in terms of being the workhorse, in terms of being the base for a lot of people. And she's always in the right position and always doing the things. Yeah. So pure lazy river, open form, free form, grab your inner tube, Warren Hayes, and tell me where you'd like to start.
Well, you touched on it a little bit. Why don't we talk about the absence of the Elite on Tuesday?
Okay.
Which I think, well, unless you count Hangman Adam Page, but you know who we're talking about when we mentioned the Elite. No Kenny Omega, no Young Bucks, in a company that is, you know, struggling to, you know, with live attendance numbers, that doesn't feel as hot, that seems to be moving away from a lot of things that made the company interesting, that had people gravitate around it. I find it very curious that, you know, all of these business woes sort of started appearing when less and less focus were put on some of the guys who were there from the get-go and who drew new faces into new eyes to the company that got people excited for AEW, right? Seeing Omega, the Bucks, Cody, all those guys, of course, Cody is where he is right now, but I found it very curious. And, you know, I can't entirely blame their absence for losing on Tuesday, but I feel like a lot of the bleed that AEW is experiencing right now has to do with them straying from their original course, which is, you know, a true alternative, new faces, guys that people on the grassroots were really into and were supporting. And it's been really difficult, I feel, to reintegrate Omega and the Bucks into top positions. Look, I mean, you can make the counter argument to me straight off the bat and say, yeah, but Warren, the Bucks were at Wembley in a big time match. What are you talking about? You know, and they're now up for the tag team titles. They're the number one contender. Sure, but they don't feel big anymore. It's like the company is not throwing its weight behind them anymore. And that's what I find. I thought that was a glaring absence from this Tuesday. I thought it was strange because, like you said, multiple former WWE guys on the show, Adam Copeland wrapping it up, and poor Adam Copeland, you know, worst performing quarter hour of the show.
That was a straight WWE match.
Yeah, and it was a straight
And that's WWE. A problem too here with him. I mean, he didn't have the indie run that Cody had. He didn't have the New Japan run that Cody had. He is coming straight from 20 some odd years of doing one style.
Or even his buddy Christian.
Yeah, well, Christian, you know? I mean, Christian can work other styles and stuff too, it appears.
That's what I mean. Like his buddy Christian, you know, he was able to move around and do other stuff and absorb things from elsewhere.
I have thought this has been a problem since inception, to be honest with you, that the Elite, in their humility, I guess would be the words I'd use, decided that they weren't going to be pushed as the ultimate top act. And we need to build these other guys up. Okay. Great. But we still haven't gotten that yet. And we are now 4 years in. We just surpassed 4 years of AEW. And we have yet to have Kenny and the Bucks and Hangman as your kind of, and this is what I think the fans wanted, holding all the gold and having the best matches. Mm-hmm. I think that's what in everybody's head this was going to be. Instead, we built everybody up, and then we took a step back. We gave Kenny kind of a middling title run. Don Callis was fantastic, but I don't think people wanted to boo Kenny. I think Adam Page had, I mean, I've said this before, Adam Page had no big feuds. Mm-hmm. He had no great feuds to build. He had good matches as a champion, but he didn't have feuds. So I think people didn't get into that title run. And I was saying all along, what you need to do is you need to get this title on somebody who can talk. And they did. And it's MJF. And MJF wants to do sketch comedy and rock tributes. The Rock. Not rock and roll. The Rock type tributes. He wants to do the stuff that he grew up on in WWE for the most part. And I think they took a look at all these. They are having great matches, but again, great matches don't grow the audience. And there's a portion of the audience that doesn't want it to grow. They want it to be their own, you know, indie record store, or the indie band that, you know, never sells out. I get that. But it's character and promos and feuds and heat that grows your audience, that makes people want to watch your television show. Mm-hmm. And then the great matches can happen on your pay-per-views and your big events. I get that. Well, I don't want to watch dinner theater. I want to watch professional wrestling. Okay, great. After you've seen Commander's match 3 weeks in a row, you've seen it already. What
then
now?
Again, here we shouldn't be seeing Commander.
I agree.
Matches 3 weeks in a row with the depth that this roster has.
Yes, that's, and shame me for my gringo pronunciation of it. I
Commander.
Apologize.
No, but I'm just putting on airs. I'm just putting on airs.
I know. That's it's all. Fine. We do that here. Chris doesn't like it, but I do it anyways. Yeah, and I it's just one of those things where it's like, I think they've made an overcorrection in the wrong way. I think they've decided that it's, and there's a lot of Jimmy Jacobs in this behind the scenes, sure. In my opinion.
Sure.
You know, the whimsy. This is like everything's now almost BTE in some.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ways, where it's like, I call it Wes Anderson wrestling. It's ironic. Everybody knows it's fake. We're just doing the wacky comedy and stuff. And, you know, everybody's going to laugh and go home happy type of a thing. And I think there's not enough hate in this company. I think everybody knows everybody's friends in this company. I don't think there's enough acts that hate each other on television that are building legitimate feuds and acting in that way. I think that's my problem with the whole thing. But again, I'm old and I want that stuff in my wrestling. I don't know if others do, but the numbers kind of bear out that they don't want whatever they're getting.
You'd think that after the past year, you would have understood that a lot of people hate each other in this company.
That's speaking behind the scenes, which, though.
Speaking of which.
Yes, I'll give you.
I'm going to double dip here on the
lazy
river,
go ahead.
If you don't mind.
I'll trash you next week. Go ahead.
So there were rumors, tremendous, tremendous rumors being reported that CM Punk was heading to WWE and that they were negotiating. And then it turns out both Dave Meltzer and Sean Ross Sapp, they came out and said, nah, brother, it's not going to happen. Dave Meltzer, even on the Observer, on Wrestling Observer Radio, said they out flat. This is what he said. Of course, this is all reports and conjecture. He says they turned him down. Flat out, the decision was a no. He wanted to go there, and the decision was a no. I mean, it can always change because Dave always has to add that caveat and everything.
And so does Sean in his defense. It's one of those things. But continue.
I mean, it can always change. And it was brought up to me that there was no such thing as no forever when it comes to WWE, but it is no for now. Just brilliant syntax here, once again, by our boy Dave. But you get the picture. WWE just flat out said no to him. Despite people saying, oh, we got to buy tickets for Chicago. I mean, of course, anything can happen, but personally, I'm not surprised. Vince has a history of not working well with people who sue him. Vince will forgive a lot of people for a lot of things, but I rack my brain trying to think of people who have outright sued him where he has rehired, and I'm having a hard time trying to figure someone out.
Ultimate Warrior.
What was it? Didn't he sue him after?
It might have been. But I don't think this is a Vince call. I think this is a Triple H call. I think Vince is a consultant, and he might have final say. I'm on the other side of this. My skepticism is high right now.
Okay.
And I'm reading the headlines, and it gets me thinking. Because the headlines are couched in a very specific way, too. Like, Sean Ross Sapp's, our boy over there, is that they are not negotiating right now. Could mean a deal's already done. Could mean he's Absolutely. Already in the fold.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just waiting and crossing the T's and dotting the I's. I am of the opinion he's showing up in Chicago.
You're still in on that one.
I am. I think WWE has decided to go full petty. I think there are people within that company who will who think it's a good idea. And mm-hmm. I think there is there might be some softening of hurt feelings between management and CM Punk with some go betweens, like say one Cody Rhodes.
You think Cody would go to bat for CM Punk? You and me.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. I do. I think he's a guy that sees business and doesn't care about the other stuff and that, you know, hey, don't keep him on a long leash. Keep him on a short leash.
Mm-hmm.
But it'd be good. And, you know, if he acts up, you can fire him. I think Cody's that kind of person. I don't know. Vince and Triple H are petty, but they're also petty.
No, I understand. And I think, look, I understand the petty argument. Don't get me wrong. You know, it's been the WWE playbook for years. But, okay, let's say outside of the petty argument, what value does CM Punk bring to WWE right now in 2023? When it's the hottest it's been in years, it has all of its stars at the top. You've got stars right now who are not, you know, for part-timers who are not working because of the SAG-AFTRA strike right. and are coming in and are just glad to do stuff and are showing up, collecting a paycheck. Like, I have trouble seeing what value CM Punk has to bring to a company right now, which feels hot, acts like it's hot, and fans react like it's hot.
But it's cooled a bit, admittedly. You and I will both admit from the bloodline angle to now, it has cooled off a little bit.
I think the bloodline has cooled off, but...
I mean, Judgment Day is hot. Don't get me wrong.
But you look at ratings, you look at houses, like these... You know, look, AEW sells a Dynamite, they're 4,500 tickets, and we all go, woo! You know,
I think that's bad.
I know it's bad. What I'm trying to say is that that's their highs these days for Dynamites, right? Which is not great, but it's still their highs.
It's a third of SmackDown is what it is.
And that's the point. SmackDown, Raw,
yes.
They're filling out the arenas everywhere they go, 10, 12, 13,000.
I am not saying WWE needs him.
No, that's the point.
I am not. But he is singularly a guy... that if he can control himself, and that's always the big if. And you know what? WWE has the means and stuff to just keep him on a bus not have him interact with anybody. I don't think he'd be coming in to help people. And he'd be coming in on a star deal. Tell me who I need to work with. I'll work with them. Great. In and out. He's not there to be work friends like he was in AEW. He's a guy who can singularly talk people into the building in terms of a promo. And there's nobody out there who does that other than maybe Eddie Kingston.
But that's the point that I have right now is like they don't even need a guy to talk you into the building. The buildings are filling up. They're selling out stadiums.
Like, there's the concept of more. There's a concept of more here. I know you think I'm full of it right now.
No, I'm not trolling.
I'm not arguing with you in bad faith here. I'm saying, yeah, we're doing great right now. But we could always be hotter.
Don't worry. WWE doesn't want money. They want all the money. That's fine. Like, yes. You know, I'm with you with that. But when your venues are selling out regardless, like they're hitting max capacity everywhere they go. Uh-huh. They're selling WrestleMania floor seats at $9,000 a seat.
Yeah.
Like, what more can CM Punk bring to this right now? Right now is what I'm saying.
Just more of an edge. That's it.
I don't know.
I really don't see it. We can agree to disagree here, and I fully embrace your position. I'm not there yet.
I want to make something very clear. I hope CM Punk returns to WWE because this is the kind of stuff that I love. I love the chaos. This is the kind of thing that I thrive upon. And the business, talking about pro wrestling is infinitely more fun with CM
Punk's
Punk
matches other than walking brawls do nothing for me. It's all mouth for me. And it gets me to watch TV every time. I mean, Collision, his instincts were better than whoever's doing it now. Let's put it that way. That's my feeling on this thing. I'm going to double dip now. First, new AEW tag team champions, Big Bill and Ricky Starks, just bodied FTR.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know why. Heard things. Rumor and innuendo. Injuries. Punishment. What have you. Now they got to continue this. Now you got to make them the most dominant tag team, perhaps even ever, in AEW, because they did this. I didn't mind this as much as I love FTR. I love the concept of, hey, somebody had a bad day and just got bodied by another team. I think that adds intrigue as well. And I like both these guys. Big Bill has improved so much, and nobody gives him credit for it. He's fantastic. I liked this. The flip side of that, and I'm not on number two yet, but is that Chris Jericho had two kickouts too many in that match against Hobbs.
Oh my God.
He should have been destroyed as well. No matter what narrative you give to him. He got too much offense in that match to me. I think he just should have been absolutely destroyed here.
Did we see the same match? We're talking about the Tuesday match, right?
Yes.
With Hobbs.
Yeah.
And you're saying it was six minutes
and it was 4 minutes too long because Jericho got a couple of comebacks in there. In my opinion.
And I don't have a problem with that at all.
No, that's fine. I'm watching that. I'm going, one kick out is fine. Three kickouts, a little too many for me. That's more my point here.
But this is kind of what you could be expecting because, you know, there's a lot of people like,
he's
it's Chris Jericho.
He's a champ.
It's Chris Jericho. He only thinks about himself. He never puts
anyone over. No, I'm not going that far.
But there's a lot of people who do have that impression where it's like, oh, okay. So I think the reverse psychology here is that, oh, he is kicking out. Oh, so he might win this despite the fact that Hobbs is dominating and destroying him. Because at some point with that second kick out, I wasn't so sure anymore. And that added more intrigue to the matches that was going on.
I get that. But that's booking for the internet. And I don't like booking for the internet at all. You know, the thing about, I mean, and we've talked about on this show a number of times, the fact that none of the young guys ever look good for being in a feud with Chris Jericho. it's always, you know, Jericho gets a higher place after losing the feud or whatever type of a thing. But I mean, it wasn't that. It was more like the underdog, you know, trying to fight his way up type. There needed to be a promo of some kind telling me some sort of story here, I think, before the match or something to that effect. Like even Hobbs jumping him before the bell and him valiantly fighting back or something. But he came in as kind of cocky Chris Jericho, and you're kind of like, all right, but now he's doing the Horatio Alger, you know, I'm gonna pull myself up from my bootstraps and beat Will Hobbs type of a thing. It didn't ring true for me. That was my problem here.
I thought it worked. I thought it worked because he came in super, like, superstar pro wrestler, legitimate Hall of Fame guy, Chris Jericho, coming in. He's, like you said, cocksure, arrogant, coming in to fight the new guy.
You know what? That could have been a story they told then on, pushed it harder on commentary a little bit, you know.
Sure.
And even beforehand, look, former world champion, first world champion, you know, legend type of a thing. And instead, it's just, you know, everybody's doing the sing-along to Judas. And it's just like, okay. I'm going to give flowers to somebody, something I trash usually. I think WWE is doing a very good job with angles, the main roster, especially this Judgment Day thing. What I mean by this is on the main roster, there's a lot of angles with lots of moving parts, and they're building them all well. And there's a lot of A, B, B, C, A, C connections in these things. Like in the Judgment Day, you have the JD McDonagh story, but you have JD's relationship with, why did I forget his name all of a sudden? Archer, the Archer of Infamy.
Damian Priest.
Damian Priest, thank you. You have his relationship with him, you have his relationship with Dominic, and you have his relationship with Rhea, and you have his relationship with Finn. You have Priest's relationship with Rhea, you have him not trusting Finn, and you have his relationship with Dom. You have Dom and Rhea, you have that, this, and the other. You have in the Uso storyline, you have, okay, Scottish guy. Why am I forgetting names all of a sudden? Drew McIntyre.
Okay.
Doesn't trust Jey Uso because he just turned and he just got here. So he's a little heelish. You have Kevin Owens and Sammy wanting their tag titles back. So there's a little bit of tension there with Cody at the same time. You have Cody trying to play peacemaker with all these parts here. You have, you know, you still have the heel elements of the bloodline out here, and you have Cena out in that kind of thing. You have all these various moving parts in different angles. And they're building even the minor characters in these things very, very well, I think. And you know, we love to trash the melodrama, and you know, the AEW fandom loves calling it, you know, oh, you like dinner theater type of a thing. But that's, you know, part and parcel of what professional wrestling is building these characters, giving them character traits that will then conflict with other characters on this show, and then them having staged fights in the ring to try and figure that all out. So I've given kudos to the creative before. I'm gonna give it to them again. I think they're doing a hell of a job on these shows, and it makes, if you watch Raw live, which I did for the first time in ages, it makes 3 hours go quicker when the stories are a little bit more interesting and it's not just fart jokes and bathroom humor. So I mean, I enjoyed it. Your turn, sir.
Just as a quick one, like, you know, I think there's a lot of, just to add on, I think there is a lot of truth to what you're saying in a sense that you can feel that Vince isn't elbows deep in it anymore.
Yes.
Because there are significant changes that are made to how people are presented and how things happen, that it's just like, okay, this all feels very different at the very least. So yes, you know, I will go down that path, but I feel like there's a lot of mistrust angles going on.
Yes.
in WWE as well. Like I feel like
it feels such like a high.
Yeah, that still might be a sign there, because I feel like they hit such a high with that, with the bloodline, because the bloodline, that's essentially all it was. It's like, who do we mistrust this week, kind of thing. And then we'll carry that on to the next pay-per-view. And then it's like, oh, now we don't trust this guy anymore. And so on and so forth. Rinse, repeat. That's just, there you go. But, you know, like damage control is kind of this, in the same boat as well, right? I feel like there's a lot of this on the roster. You know, Bobby Lashley was doing that with the Street Profits, right? Over the past couple of weeks. Now that it seems okay. Now that it seems like they're, I don't know. Are they good now? I don't even know.
No, they're heels. They're all heels.
No, but I mean, they're good. Like, as
They're on the same page.
But there was that, you know, prove yourself to me. Oh, just like the other guys were proving themselves to the other guy.
That's a perfectly fair point. And you know, I think AEW's had a lot of that too. So, you know, repetition of angles and stuff like that.
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. No, but your point's well taken. I get that.
Yeah. You told the good Shake Them Ropes audience that I watch a lot of foreign stuff.
Yes. Well, oh, something I'll have no idea what you're talking about. Go for it. I'm here for it. I'm here to learn. I'm sitting at the learning tree, Warren. Tell me about New Japan Strong or something like that.
Close. New Japan Super Junior Tag League 2023 has been announced. It's going to be starting in a very shortly, actually. And it's October 21st. It's and it's also the start of the tour that will lead us to Power Struggle, which is going to be the last big show before Wrestle Kingdom this year. And it's going to be a quick tournament. Starts on the 21st, ending on November 4th. 10 teams in a round robin one block tournament. You know, I can drop a couple of names here. Of course, the current champions, Clark Connors and Joe Maloney, are going to be in there. They're a fantastic team. There's a couple of really great teams in here. Robbie Eagles and Kosei Fujita. Fujita is one of the recently graduated young lions who was supposed to be on excursion. You know, they go off in Japan. They leave.
I know what an excursion is. Yes.
And they go off and they do the thing. No, but I know
2-3 years and then come back. And they're supposed to come back new. Yeah.
He's hanging around Japan a little bit, and it's not quite clear. He's not like buggering off to Mexico or something like that, like a lot of them do. So he's going to be in there as well. TJP and Francesco Akira are also in this. Probably one of the unsung great tag teams in the world right now. I'd say, in my opinion, the third best tag team in the world right now. And I know TJP, Punching Bag, etc.
No, if you get past TJP's social media, he's a great wrestler.
He's incredible. And Francesco Akira, they're former junior tag champs as well. They are an incredible team.
Are Haste and Nichols in this thing?
No, because they're heavyweights.
I did not know that. Okay, they got moved up.
So they're going to be most likely in World Tag League, which is going to follow this once this little tournament is done. One of the big names that's missing actually from all of this is Leo Rush, who was taken out with a bout of the flu, apparently a fever,
he says, I believe.
Yeah, well, you know, New Japan's been referring to it as an outbreak of the flu. It endangered their show, their Destruction show, this past Monday, where a lot of guys were taken out, but most guys made it on the show except for Leo Rush, which was a shame because he was in a three-way for the junior heavyweight title, which a lot of us had pegged him to win, and unfortunately he didn't make it. And normally he's in a tag team with New Japan stalwart Yo.
Yes.
And
of Show and Yo fame.
Of Show and Yo, and yes, they have since
I know they broke up a long time ago. I don't watch all that much New Japan.
That's fine.
My back.
I'm keeping you up to
date. I'm yelling at the people who are now yelling at their phone, but go ahead. I imagine the people who hate listen to this show. It's like, Hawkins, you don't watch New Japan. It's the best wrestling in the world. Okay, great. You know, I liked it for a while. I don't now. It's in a cold period for me. Let's continue.
That's fine.
Are there any shock teams or teams from other companies that are in this?
Surprisingly, no. And there's Titan from CMLL who's coming back, but Titan is kind of like he's New Japan by extension. He shows up for these junior things, so it's not that much of a surprise. And he's also a part of LIJ, Los Ingobernables de Japón, so Tetsuya Naito's group. So I mean, it's not as if a big surprise. A lot of us were expecting one CMLL team in this, but no, there's nothing really shocking.
I was almost expecting a AEW team to get some seasoning, like a younger team or something, like an Action Andretti and maybe a healthy half of Top Flight to be able to get in there or something like that.
Which could have absolutely been possible. Maybe Tony Khan just wants to hang on to the troops these days and because look, you have Taguchi and the DKC, and if you've never heard of the DKC, I have heard of the DKC. And that's a bit of a team where you're like, really, you didn't have anyone else. You couldn't have flown in anyone else. Not that the DKC is a bad wrestler. Not that Taguchi is not interesting in his age.
He drinks, he hits a guy with his butt. We get it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always a butt stuff threat.
I do the same stuff now. I mean, I get it. It's all I do on this show is I drink and I hit people with my butt. I hope Leo Rush is really sick and this isn't malcontent type of thing.
But
you'd
have the impression that he is, because, you know, he's been doing interviews saying how much he loves hanging out in Japan, how much it's reinvigorated him. And he
says that before he flames out, though, no matter where he is.
I'm just convinced he was meant to win. I'm sure they had pegged him to win the title on off of Hiromu last week. Just this Monday. It's a shame. I hope he does show up for the tournament, because Yo and Leo Rush are a fantastic tag team and they bring the best out of each. Leo Rush brings a lot of good out of Yo, who a lot of us had felt had sort of lost the spark and was a little, you know, it was just going through the motions. But these two together, they work really, really well. I don't know, like a lot of familiar names, all people we've seen up and down and all around. I think they could have used a little more pizzazz. Again, I was fully expecting one team from Mexico. Not even. We'll see. Look, I'm going to be watching for TJP and Francesco Akira. They're tremendous. They're like the Will Ospreay of the junior tag teams. You can't have a bad match with these guys.
Because of the plethora of wrestling this week, I didn't watch any classic stuff. But I don't, I'm going to tell you this. I liked AEW Dynamite a lot, with the exception of the MJF, the end of that angle. Although I think, I don't think Jay White's bringing it on the mic. That's just me, though. I'm not feeling his comedic, sly character at all. I think he needs to be a little bit more in control of the situation. And the only other thing I didn't like the Adam Cole segment. I'm sorry. The close up of the faces, there's no laugh lines in there for me. And he's giving in way too much to absurd situations in terms of if I was scripting this. You know, I need to he needs to think of a competent reason why he needs to mow the lawn for him to do it, because otherwise it's just for comedy type, and he looks like a dope. Mm-hmm. And Adam Cole is never a dope. He's usually the smartest guy in the room as a character type of a thing. I love this run of Swerve Strickland right now. I could do with a little less Nana. I think we've overplayed the Nana dancing a little bit, guys. Let's back off. I enjoy Nana. Kind of part of me wants to see Tully Blanchard do that dance just once, but I like Nana a lot. I wish he'd be able to add a little bit more, but that was also a complaint I had when Stokely was around. Bring him back, please, Weekly. Mm-hmm. I like him, but I want them to go harder into the menace of him, because the best swerve on this run was the invasion of Nick Wayne's house.
This tremendous
stuff. When they did that beatdown, and that's he's losing a little bit of that viciousness in these feuds, and I want more of it, because I like these types of threat characters. I love that match with Danielson, and I loved that they did an angle throughout the show, one for Hangman, where he comes out in the beginning, he prevents that thing, and then Nana comes out later and tries to screw with that, and you know, that kind of continuity, I dig that a lot. But yeah, a little bit more seasoning here, and I'm ready to go full throw, put him into the upper echelon of AEW now, because they need somebody, and nobody is stepping up when given the ball, especially Pillars.
No, yeah, out of all of that, let's say outside of MJF, I think the only one who really came across more, who's coming out of this better, is Darby.
No, Darby's great, but Darby is perfect where he is, as because he needs to overcome the whole Christian stuff, and then we can put him in like a main event title if he wants it. But he never really has to have it. You know, he's that kind of character where people get behind him and do that. But we need some guys other than Blackpool Combat Club in this upper rung. And, you know, while I like the Gates of Agony and while I like Brian Cage in this stable, they are definitely B and C players in this stable, and Swerve's an A, and I want him to be an A+. And him really taking kind of a, I am a brilliant leader as well type of a thing, as he did with the AR Fox in that vignette. More of that, please. Please.
He's fantastic. I've been very pro Swerve Strickland for a while, for a long, long time. And I was really happy about his match at Wrestle Dream, where I thought he got to flex a lot of his main event potential, if that makes sense, because he's smooth. He's tremendous. Like, there's not a lot of guys on the roster who wrestle like him. You know what I mean? Like, who have that just like that ebb and flow that he has. And then all of a sudden can just snap a kick across your face. And it just looks devastating.
I think he should actually get rid of some of the babyface mannerisms he has. Like the Who's House, Swerve's House stuff. Yes. No, sure. I want people booing this man and him just to grin with that crap eating grin he has all the time.
No, he's phenomenal. And I'm glad, you know, the match with Danielson, I loved it too. I thought it was fantastic. For me, he's a world. That's his ceiling. He's a world title holder for me. I think he's top guy material. Because they don't have anyone who has that energy. You know, it's to the point that when they, you know, when Cody and Brandy left the company and they were left holding the, well, what kind of reality show are they going to do? You know, so on and so forth. I was like, give it to Swerve. and you'll get an entirely different type of reality show, and you'll attract an entirely different demographic on top of that, you know?
Yeah. And a quick hit. I liked the out of the box thinking of the picture-in-picture with the Tony Storm silent vignettes. It's a more interesting way to me to do the picture-in-picture than either. You know, I like Guevara with the poster board, and this week Takeshita with the poster board because Sammy wasn't there. But I like it more than matches because I tune out of matches. I can't focus on that while, you know, Flo's yelling at me about insurance or bad pizza or whatever. I need that kind of, during commercial breaks, I kind of need that psychic break from the action so I can be back into it when I get back. And I hate the picture-in-picture concept to begin with. She was doing some clever things. The sight gag of, it cracked me up that they start the silent movie and she leaves the screen for about 15 seconds. But it was mostly to walk around and then come around in the other side. That sight gag, I thought that was great. The character can be a bit much. And this is what we kind of got into with the MJF. She's actually kind of becoming the Danhausen of the women's division, which means I don't want her anywhere near the title picture like this. And, you know, right. the opposite of the Rainmaker, the zoom in with the close up and then the hip check and Storm Zero thing. I can get past it, but if we're going to go this heavy into the comedy, they need to pull back on it when they decide they want to put her in a title program. And I think that's hard for them.
Yeah. And it's going to be hard because it's working and she's getting herself over. So it's going
but
to be
But it's the kind
to...
of out of the box thinking I want out of wrestling too. I want more of this. I want half those guys in AEW to do something about their characters other than Twitter and use this giant movie company that they have at their disposal. Not necessarily to do BTE stuff, but give me Butcher and the Blade back in their butcher shop, chopping things with blood all over themselves, hyping up a hardcore match. because that's the other thing is promos have become too back and forth. I think that's part of the weakness of the MJF Jay White thing is the back and forthness of the promo thing. I think when one side comes in, says their piece in the camera, and then later in the show, somebody else comes in, says their piece in the camera, it's a lot better and it's a lot smoother. And then they can get together for like 1 week and hype it type of a thing. But these guys have jobs and they're getting paid six figures. I want them to all be stars that earn more money too. You know, sure. It's one of those things where it's almost like you're doing it for your own career type of a thing. You know, I need to take control of my career. And if you're just happy showing up and getting a check, nothing wrong with that. I got good morning, get paid. I say that every morning. Your turn, if you have anything else.
Well, since we're talking about AEW again, I'm very bummed with the direction that Orange Cassidy has taken after losing to Jon Moxley.
Really?
I'm bummed with it. Because, well, first of all, I love the match. And I love the idea that he lost, right? I think he lost upward, right? I think it's hard to deny. You know, we're talking about Swerve and wanting to put more guys up in that upper tier, that upper echelon, right? I think this is what they were doing with Cassidy, cutting those great promo on the Dynamite between the two pay-per-views, and then coming to the ring and taking his beating but working hard and, you know, just a fantastic upward trajectory. And then next thing you know, he's back on TV because I would have had him disappear, sell the beating.
Yes. Right?
His body, that was the story. My body's broken down. I can't do it anymore. None of my finishers are effective. I've got to use sneaky mousetrap pins to get the thing, you know, so to get the win and have him go away. He was beaten up by Jon Moxley. He was bleeding. It was like, get him off TV and then have Moxley with the title and do his thing. And then you bring him back when you don't expect it. Once Moxley has done running through everyone, he comes back. In wrestling, sometimes absence makes the heart grow fonder.
I agree.
You have a guy you really like. He disappears for a couple of months. He comes back, let's say, in time for Revolution. Now the roof blows off the place. You have the first few bars of his song, you know, that starts playing. And
Jefferson James, Starship. Come on.
I had a blank. I had a complete
blank. No, that's cool. I blanked on Drew McIntyre. So
tit for tat then. And the place just goes nuts. And you've got yourself a bona fide star, and he comes back and he beats Moxley. So him coming back week after week and then ending up in a tag team with Hook feels like a demotion. Nothing against Hook. Hook's a prelim guy. That's his job right now. That's what he's doing. And I had a lot of people telling me, oh, they're elevating Hook. They're not elevating Hook. It's not that they should not be elevating Hook. They should be pushing Orange Cassidy to the moon right now, because up until his match with Mox, boy's has never been hotter in that company. You know,
can I and make I a feel, counterpoint? Go ahead and finish your point here. Sorry.
So just to wrap it up, so I feel like right now I know that the Mox got gets his bell rung and all of this, and now they're swinging back to him because it turns out Rey Fénix is banged up too. Like everyone's banged up.
Yes.
So we're circling back to Orange Cassidy, which is
Rey
probably
Fénix doing the Al Cervant. Oh, my back!
Exactly.
Let me do four other aerial moves, and then put my hand behind my back for a second.
Like, look, I'm selling.
Yes. Glad we both agree on that. Okay. Continue.
You go back to put the title back on Orange Cassidy. It's you see what the pattern is. We're circling back to Mox. But I feel like in the meantime, it's a bit of a pattern that Tony Khan has with a lot of guys, where he's gonna push, bring them up to a point, and then suddenly I've got nothing, or it's not as interesting, or I don't know what the next step is. It's happened with Ricky Starks as
it's
well.
It's happened with Wardlow, and it's gonna happen again.
And
I think.
So, the confidence isn't there, but I thought Orange Cassidy was a sure thing. I really thought Orange Cassidy was like, it was the easiest thing to book. Take him off TV, have him come back at some point. But I don't know. I'm really, really disappointed with how this is going.
Here's my counterpoint, because, and this might be, look, one of the things we say on this show a lot is that wrestling fans are great at booking stories in their head that don't exist, because booking is lazy these days. They don't build feuds, they don't build, but we imagine it in our head. So let me posit whether or not I'm imagining this and making this up in my head. It feels like they have pivoted Orange Cassidy's character now from being ambivalent
mm-hmm.
to actually caring about this title.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to possibly see, you know, if the plan is to put this on Moxley and they're taking it away from Orange Cassidy that way, maybe a little bit of a selfish turn in Orange Cassidy, where it's like, I want my title back. Because they've kind of hinted at this with him and Hook, him kind of eyeing that FTW title.
Sure.
When he was there. I just don't know, because they did the whole thing where he's staring at the belt the entire time after he wins it and is walking up like he's Gollum, who's found his precious. Now, I might just be reading far too much into that, because, again, another thing we say on the show is that Tony can't cook, and he doesn't build stories very well. He has great ingredients, can't necessarily put them all together in a recipe all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But Orange Cassidy is a very smart wrestler in terms of when he turns on and off emotion on screen and in storyline. And maybe he's hooked into something here where he's starting to pivot that character from not caring about anything to now caring about something. You know, there's no more that nihilism, you know, I'd love for the pivot to even include in his ring interest, weighing in at 195. What? Wait, we never knew how much he weighed before. Yeah. Since when? You know, that kind of thing. I think that'd be a hell of an idea. I just think it's something I'm making up in my head, though.
I think you're right, because he does care about the title. Because look, you know, when he did the bit with Tony on Tuesday, right? Tony was, you know, Hook said, "Hey, Tony, why don't you give it to my boy Orange?" And Tony's like, "Orange, do you want it?" And he was like, "Whatever." And then Tony went, "Well, if you don't want it," and he was like, "No, I want it." So, you know, I think there's something to it. And look, at some point you have to evolve characters too, right? They can't always be exactly the same thing.
Yeah, Vince.
Yeah. Because
the Hardy Boys have been 25 for 40 years now. I'm tired of this. Although that's not even Vince's fault anymore.
It's not Vince's problem anymore. Nope.
But that's Vince's theory, is people want to root for the guy that they knew. They don't want to root for, you know, they don't want people to evolve necessarily, unless it's been done on my television, like Bailey and Aunt Pam, you know, that kind of thing. Or Asuka going from dancing Asuka to weird psycho hooker clown Asuka, or she is now. Love that girl. But yeah, I don't have a lot more in my lazy river. You have anything else?
Where do you think the NWA is going to end up on TV? Billy Corgan said that he's got two TV deals, and they're about to leave YouTube. They got two deals, Jeff. The National Wrestling Alliance, Billy Corgan.
Which we haven't watched since Cornette got fired here at Shake Them Ropes, because we were interested in it then. The answer to your question almost elicited a swear word from me in terms of who gives a... this is Corgan playing Court Bauer,
right?
In some ways.
It's, you know, the playbook.
Well, who's the TV deal?
It says, I have to be vague. I can't say who, but it's a top 20 network, Jeff.
All right, so let's go into the 30s and think about this, because it's probably somebody he's overhyping, or it's some network that had a hit show once and nobody watches anymore. You know, like CMT.
Which, when you think of it,
or it's top 20 in people's houses, but nobody watches it whatsoever.
Right, exactly, because it's part of the cable package or whatever.
My God, TNA had the TV Guide Network at one point.
That's
where,
true.
Where they were like, everybody's scrolling for channels and they're up in the upper left-hand corner.
Look, I just thought
you're killing me here because
I've got nothing for you, and honestly, it doesn't matter really.
Access,
well, you know, Access already has Impact, right?
Doesn't matter. They tried to get a bunch of MMA on it once at one time too. I mean, they just want content that's cheap and nobody cares about, unless they're getting what Katie what's her face going around being drunk and interviewing out of shape has been rock and roll stars or going to music festivals and. You know, I'm partying. Let's drink. That's all Access is right now, I think. I don't know. I haven't watched it in years.
I don't know. I mean, VH1.
I used to watch it a lot because they used to have old MMA. Used to have like old. I forget the name of the federation, but that's how I got into UFC. They used to play old UFCs on there and Prides and stuff. So I watched that thing all the time. And then Ring of Honor was on there, and now Impact's on there. And I hear Impact's good. I just don't have time.
You got to make choices at some point.
Give me who you think.
I don't know.
Who wants a relationship with Billy Corgan? MTV. It's MTV.
Yeah, I think it might be MTV.
Oh, it's the return of Wrestling Society X. Bring it on.
Or what about like True TV?
VH1. It's that, right? Because right now Corgan's aged out, so it's more VH1.
It's more VH1. It's more his crowd, right?
I'll take E. I'll put that down there. Maybe the Entertainment Network has come back instead of doing like AJ Benza conspiracy shows and, you know, oh look, the Kardashians are on another wacky adventure. Maybe we want some guys nobody's heard of wrestling. That's what we want here. The Entertainment Network.
You were chuckling about CMT, but isn't there a
it's a Fox network? News because Tyrus is on it. That's where we're going.
We're going to FS1. There
Fox
you go.
Fox Business. It's Fox Business we're going to. not Fox News. No, we're making that hard news now and stuff. No, we're going to Fox Business. It's gonna be Maria Bartiromo and her. She's gone insane the past few years. Sure. So she can be a part of this whole thing too. It's probably Fox related. It has to be now.
It
now
has
you've
to
convinced
be.
Me into it.
There's got to be some kind of.
Because Tyrus is going to be involved in this somehow. It's going to come probably. On after Gutfield.
Well, I mean, look, he's retired. So maybe they're going to have him on like as a general manager role.
Oh yeah. He'll be the broadcaster. And now you're going to watch Gutfeld's and the Fives Tyrus on NWA wrestling every week. And okay. Billy Corgan will come out there with something libertarian just to
stir the pot.
Just to stir the pot. Now stay tuned for Hannity. God. All right. This show's gone off the rails. Let's cut it there. This has been Shake the Rubs. You follow me at CrapGame13 on X. I am on Blue Sky because Warren was nice enough to give me a code, but I don't use it. But I'm Jeff Hawkins over there, and you'll see like three posts for me. You can follow the show at Shake the Rubs on X till Elon Musk nukes us all. We're part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Shows for any sort of fandom you have. I am also a member of Fight Game Media Network. I do a show with Paul Fontaine on there every Wednesday, about 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air, called, creatively enough, The Dynamite Show, where we thoroughly deconstruct Dynamite. And, you know, I'm usually cranky by that time, so I rant like this. That's what I do. Chris Novembrino is at @DOCTOR_NOV on Instagram. He gives guitar lessons. He's playing for trams all week. If you're in the general Southwest area, go to New Mexico, ride a tram, drop him a 20. He'll be very appreciative, and he'll kiss you on the lips. Warren, you are now part of Voices of Wrestling. Plug your stuff.
Thanks for having me on, Jeff, for allowing me to attempt to fill Chris's very, very large, ample.
Oh, no, you were filling my spot on the show. I was filling Novembrino, so go ahead.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Well, there you go. So then I feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
I do the Mr. Warren Hayes show every week where I recap the week, provide analysis, previews, reviews, all that kind of good stuff over on youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. You can also find it on your favorite podcast application as well. And as far as social media goes, I am on the Blue Sky. So you can find me there at Mr. Warren Hayes. I have more than three posts, though. So there you go.
So you're Mr. Blue Sky, like ELO.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
We'll see you next week.
Music. It's not just part of our daily lives. It's part of our wrestling fandom as well. And it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.